Technology Truths, brought to you by GEICO.
Technology Truths.
Truth. Teenagers can communicate entirely in emojis.
How was the birthday party? Pizza slice, kitten, soccer ball, pineapple?
Truth. It's so easy to switch and save on car insurance at GEICO.com.
What are you talking about? Paperclip, shoulder shrug, high five, wizard hat? What?
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
GEICO presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi! So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The GEICO Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit GEICO.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
Let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that GEICO not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to GEICO is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to Twig, otherwise known as the Flagship of Stupidity. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub, but I'm not alone as I trek through the world of nerdery, geeketry, and other words that mean nerd, dork, or dweeb. I'm joined with my ever-faithful compatriot,
Alex.
That's right, guys. So we are taking a look at what happened in the world this week, but as always, we start the show off by saying, where the hell have you been? It's Memorial Day if you're in the United States, so hopefully you are celebrating safe, honoring your veterans of wars, foreign and domestic, and doing the right thing by them. Celebrating safely with fireworks and hot dogs, because hey, what says freedom more than exploding stuff? And what used to be a pig? Anyway, hopefully you've had a fantastic long holiday weekend. We had our long holiday weekend here in Canada last weekend, which I spent my time... I can't remember what I was doing last weekend, actually. I think I was just kind of sleeping, actually. My time away from the show has not been anything exceptional. I've been mostly just kind of relaxing, trying to get in a better headspace so I can deliver the best show I can for you, the people, the loyal Twig listeners who stuck it out with us for the last 12 years or so. Definitely do thank each and every one of you.
Absolutely. I think Blair was under the weather too, so you guys were like quarantining yourselves.
Yeah, we just had a weekend where we just needed to sleep. I had one day where I slept 17 hours.
Good God, sir.
I was just wiped right out. I'm finally starting to feel good. I guess in other exciting news, it's been no secret. I made this post on social media a little while ago. I am going through the weight loss surgery. I had my first orientation. And I start to meet with people, hopefully in the near future. I go through my first round of blood tests and stuff tomorrow. So the process begins. I've been on my diet now for a week. I've only had one stumble, which wasn't too bad, all things considered, considering how badly it could have gone. But everything else, I've been eating on track. My calories are on track. Can't do a lot of moving around because... don't kind of have a leg for that, but been keeping my calories within reason that I've been given using the Fitness Pal tracker. So I've been using that to keep track of things. So hopefully we'll see where things end up, and hope they'll have the surgery before the end of the year, if not early next.
Good.
Gonna go through it with my wife, Blair. So she's also doing her blood work and stuff tomorrow. So, we're excited to see how this whole process turns out. My sister-in-law recently had the surgery herself, and she's seen tremendous results from that. So yeah, it's, going to be quite the surgical journey here on Twig. And as always, I'll keep you guys posted with my successes, my failures. You can always keep it locked to my social media at Birdman Dodd, where I tend to post most of my thoughts, and or Facebook on the same link at Birdman Dodd. So Alex, what have you been doing the last week and a half?
Weight loss surgery stuff myself. I had the surgery January of 2017, but I had the sleeve, which was the first of a two-step process. And when I plateaued and they found that I wasn't losing anymore, and they're like, you got some other health issues that would probably be better addressed by a full bypass, I started the process of going to do that. So it's basically the exact same thing you did, only I don't have to go through orientation. I don't have to go through any like diet training class. They want me to basically do a refresher, like, here's the workbook, work through it, you know, show us the internist, which is a doctor that is of internal medicine, that basically goes over your numbers. You have to do an ECG. They check your heart. They check anything else just to make sure that everything is okay for you to do your surgery. And last time I had to go through like a colonoscopy, an endoscope through my throat where they check for ulcers. They did the full battery of tests on me like 2.5 years ago. And this time I was like, okay, so what's he going to do? I bring my blood work to him. I get there. I take the bus into Guelph and everything. I'm there for 3 or 4 minutes, and he goes, okay, you're good. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, you can have surgery whenever you want. So now I've got an appointment in the end of June to meet up with the team, and then maybe one more appointment, and maybe in the fall I'll be having surgery, something like that. It all depends on what they think. But yeah, pretty much I'm good to go whenever. And yeah, so interesting times ahead. Other than that, I have been doing some reviews. I've got a few games on the go. Right now I have Trails of Cold Steel 2 that I'm working on, which is a remastered PS3 game on the PS4. I also have one of those interactive graphic novels, The Adventure Stories on the Switch that I'm working on, and I think maybe one or two other little things here and there, some products to review that will be coming up in the next week or two. Other than that, I have been doing some spring cleaning. I put the air conditioner in. I haven't used it yet because I haven't needed to, but I figured put it in now before it gets so hot that I'm dying trying to put it in.
Yeah, same here. We've had a couple of warm days here. We just got our air conditioner in today. In fact, during this recording, you can probably hear it, so I apologize for that, but it is what it is.
It's better than Birdman's melting into the floor.
Yeah, exactly. It's better than me dying of heat stroke. So, anyway, coming up on the show this week, we had a bunch of stories ranging from Call of Duty, how much certain streamers are getting paid, what's going on with the Sonic the Hedgehog movie, and so much more. But we have some reviews coming to you from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment, DK Publishing, and you have a movie review as well.
I do.
All right, so we'll be coming that all up on the show, but right now, here is my review of the Lego Movie 2, the second part. We'll be back, guys, right after this, only on Twig, your flagship of stupidity.
Crank up those subwoofers, dude, and check this out.
We are looking at the Lego Movie 2, the second part, coming to us from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment, and this is a movie that kind of took me by surprise. I was actually very happy when I saw the Lego Movie a couple of years back with Chris Pratt, Alison Brie, Elizabeth Banks, and Will Arnett filling out the main crew, and I was pleasantly surprised with this one. Actually, I found after about the first half hour, it really kind of picks up. The storyline is it takes place about 5 years after the first movie. And there's Apocalypse Burg, which is the ruined Lego city. And there's the sister... It's kind of hard to explain, but look at it this way. The real world and the Lego world take place at the same time. And the brother Finn has to play with his sister Bianca. And basically the merging of two worlds. And it's kind of a weird family thing where you look at how a brother and sister should play together, and when it works together, it's magical and it's all wonderful. But it takes a while to get there. And yes, there's time travel, Die Hard references, Gandalf, and the Justice League, and Jonah Hill is the Green Lantern, bizarrely enough. And Jason Momoa reprising his role as Aquaman, which is kind of cool. You could almost consider this canon. But you get a surprisingly fun movie. Once you get past about the first 20 minutes, half hour, I find the movie really kind of picks up there with, especially once they introduce Rex Danger Vest, who is the future version of Emmett, who's become embittered, saying, "I don't need anybody. I'm a dangerous outlaw. I don't need anybody at all." And he has pet raptors, and it's ridiculous and silly, and I love it. The movie itself does come with some special features, such as some deleted scenes. There's a very short making of documentary, which kind of I wish was a little bit longer. They talk about how they made the movie, but also how they got into the different characters, how they got into the voicing them, but also how they could visualize everything. Like, Lego was able to make minifigures of any animation they could put out. In theory, you could make this movie entirely real if you so chose to, which I think is tremendously cool, but they obviously bring it to life inside the computer. You get some commentary, you get a deleted scene, you get a holiday party, which I guess was the holiday short just released prior to the movie coming out. Overall, though, I'd say the Lego movie, the second part, is definitely worth adding to your collection, especially if you enjoyed the first movie and enjoy that sort of weird, irreverent humor. And it's just worth it to have Bruce Willis sitting in a spa, even if just for a few seconds.
Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping, and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the mark!
And welcome back to This Week in Geek. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd, joined with Alex, producer. Let's break things down in the world of geek, dork, and dweeb as we see fit. And of course, it wouldn't be another year in video gaming without another Call of Duty video game. However, Call of Duty is reportedly in trouble. As reported by Kotaku, next year's Call of Duty has undergone through a major upheaval as publisher Activision informed developers that studios Raven and Sledgehammer, which led the project, will no longer be in charge. Instead, three people familiar with the goings-on at the companies, Treyarch, will lead development for a new Black Ops in 2020. Treyarch has released Call of Duty Black Ops 2, 3, and etc.
Black Ops company.
Yeah, so this is kind of surprising because we're basically getting a Black Ops rights away, and we shouldn't be. Normally, we get something different. Like, we had Advanced Warfare, we had World War II. This year, we had Call of Duty Black Ops 4. This year is Call of Duty Modern Warfare, not to be confused with Call of Duty Modern Warfare 4, which came out back in the mid-aughts with the Xbox 360 and PS3 and PC. So this is interesting that Activision would just yank it out from under two studios who know what the hell they're doing.
It doesn't fare well. The question arises, if Raven's like a mobile slash, like they are a tool developer.
They do multiplayer, and they do multiplayer really, really well.
But they don't make assets themselves. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they build upon tools that other companies make. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if they were given the task of making something from scratch and they realized they're just not up to snuff.
Well, it's interesting because I'm surprised they take away the project from Sledgehammer, because I feel their campaigns were really solid, and this is going to have a new single player campaign set during the Cold War at some point. So I'm kind of surprised this is even going on, truthfully. However, though, I kind of wonder if this signals the end of the Call of Duty franchise as we know it. And what do I mean by that? If we're going to see Call of Duty move towards a different kind of model where basically we just get new maps and new modes and you pay a subscription like service, because investors want more and more returns year after year. And Call of Duty is a franchise that sells, but it's stayed pretty consistent over the last couple of years. I mean, the series was at its peak during Modern Warfare 3 and Black Ops 2, but each year it hasn't been growing the way that it used to.
Well, they're the same basic game over and over and over again, and the single-player campaigns went down. There were people that used to buy them for the single-player, and they've now given up completely, so you've got like maybe 10 or 20% of the audience that used to buy it that just aren't going to buy it at all anymore. Mm. And so that's like 5 million people that aren't going to buy it. And then you go, anytime you have a yearly title, like sports titles and that, like you have your hardcore audience, but like nothing really improves.
Well, and each studio is typically given 3 years to make each game. Treyarch will only have 2 years now, with Sledgehammer and Raven still acting as support studios. That's going to be a lot of brutal friggin' overtime and crunch time for all the developers involved. So it's going to affect the product in the end.
Absolutely. I mean, at this point, do they even need a single player?
Yes, absolutely. I think this year's lack of a single player hurt Black Ops 4.
But the question is, do they see that, or do they go, oh, no, we're going to go all in with this because now we have to save money by not having a single player?
Well, I don't know, because this year everybody compared it to the big elephant in the room being Fortnite, being the Battle Royale, and everyone's playing Blackout. But there's still the traditional multiplayer suite. But people like, well, where's my campaign? And plus, this year had the ridiculous two-tiered battle pass where, sure, you could earn your tiers, but you had to play a ridiculous amount of time. Plus, you could buy tiers if you wanted to, and you could buy additional stuff on top of that. And Call of Duty Black Ops 4's monetization process is just ridiculously overstuffed and just not worth your money, if you want my god honest opinion. However, you want to get a more in-depth opinion of it, there's a guy on YouTube named Drifter who does a vastly in-depth look at it and just how it's just not worth it, how much you're paying into it if you really want everything.
Now, are we at a point now where maybe we just don't want Call of Duty at all? Like, are we?
I wouldn't mind it if it followed an Overwatch sort of like model, where basically you buy the base game, $60, and then it just keeps updating, and you get something. Maybe you move it towards a subscription model, or maybe you do it like Rainbow Six Siege, where you have to pay for new operators.
Well, or just a thought: you want to save money? Release it every 3 fucking years. Not have 3 teams cycling in games. Have 1 team make a game every 3 years so they can focus on creating other properties that could then have potential growth. So instead of spending $200 million every year on a new title, you spend $200 million every 3 years, and then you take the $200 million of the other years and then split that into 2 or 3 smaller projects that could grow.
Well, yeah, because the last, I think the game Raven did was a game called Singularity, which came out in, I want to say, 2009, and that was okay. Well, yeah, there's not a lot of new IPs coming out of Activision that aren't Call of Duty or whatever. And
yeah,
I like Treyarch. I love Sledgehammer games. Advanced Warfare is my favorite Call of Duty ever. That's how I got into COD esports. I liked Black Ops 3, and that was Treyarch. The Infinity Ward stuff, I'm okay on. I don't know. I'm not a big Modern Warfare guy. I mean, I liked Modern Warfare 2, but I guess we'll see what this new reboot has to do with the franchise. Whether they refresh the characters or the setting, I guess we'll have to yet to be seen, because usually they premiere Call of Duty during the NBA Finals for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I've only ever played single-player mode. I played Ghosts, and I thought it was kind of cool.
Ghosts was like, crap.
But I was like, it's like 4 hours, and the whole game's done. So, and like, I'm just not somebody that sees any fun in repeating maps over and over. I was never a
competitive player.
Guy. Like, to me, that was, if I was going to do something like that repeating over and over again, I'd rather play Tetris.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just personal taste. I do like shooters. Like I was really into the old Medal of Honor series back in the day when they had like really good stories. The Battlefield games back in the day too.
The last Battlefield game I played was 4, and this was during its launch issue problem, so I stopped playing.
Oh.
I played Battlefield Hardline, and I really liked that, although you were a police officer with military weapons, so it was really odd. But it was a fun game, though. I liked it. I made it through that game with almost arresting everybody and getting very, very few kills. Because I was like, I am the law, motherfucker. I am Ice-T, SVU, bitch. anyway. So, yeah, that's Call of Duty. I guess we'll wait and see what happens for 2020. Treyarch, you've got your work cut out for you. But at Black Ops 5, I doubt it's going to disappoint because I'm a big fan of the Black Ops series. But I'm glad it's going back to the Cold War and not this weird near-future crap. Although Black Ops 3 had a fantastic multiplayer suite, but we'll talk about that later. Okay, so moving on to our next story. Once again, as reported by Kotaku, Twitch streamers can make up to $50,000 per hour streaming new video games, according to the Wall Street Journal in a weekend report. Kotaku spoke with industry sources who confirmed the report, adding that $50,000 per hour wasn't even the highest figure they'd seen. Reports that claim that publishers like Activision, Blizzard, Take-Two, Ubisoft, Electronic Arts regularly pay big sums to big-name Twitch streamers who play and publicize their games for large dedicated live fan bases, such as Dr. Lupo, who got referenced in the story, who has approximately 3.2 million Twitch followers. Streamers like Ninja got paid to play Apex Legends earlier this year. That's kind of nuts. One of the quotes out of this article is, we've seen offers well over $50,000 per hour, as well as many six- and seven-figure deals for longer-term engagements. This guy's quote, I can't pronounce his name, it's Omed Durini, the CEO of the Online Performance Group, represented top streamers like Co-Carnage and Professor Broman. I can't share specific companies, but as payment terms are usually confidential. We've had one offer from a AAA publisher that was $60,000 per hour for 2 hours. The broadcaster declined it, and the publisher came back with a blank check offer, which was still declined. Holy shit. I'm in the wrong fucking business, man.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being paid that much. Like, we're going to give you 2 hours worth of work, that's like NFL level money.
And I don't have to like suck five dicks or get like fucked for money. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you think that there's a big catch. Like, there's going to be some devious sex act involved to get this kind of money. But no, you're just playing video games and being...
And maybe making fun of it. And on top of all that money they're making during all this time, they're still getting Twitch donations. They're still getting subscription numbers, too. And brand deals.
And you see, I almost think it's a little excessive.
Oh, my God, is it ever?
No, I mean, like, I see the big trend now. You know, you see, like, on YouTube, people go, like, they'll be live broadcasting. And, like, the... people giving them $5 tips just so that you can shout them out, or like they'll ask a question, but if you tip a dollar, they'll actually answer the question. I'm like, that just seems, it's like everybody's doing it, but to me that just seems, I don't know, very, very petty and kind of gaudy. And I don't know, I'm not a big fan of how they've handled that. You know, like, you, here's a super chat, and by putting in $5, and I'm just, I don't know. To me, it feels like I would be standing at a street corner playing guitar, begging for money.
See, I don't mind tipping certain streamers a few bucks here and there, especially if I enjoy
their content. But like, people are doing it to get attention. Like they feel like I'm your friend because I keep giving you money. You keep talking to me on here, and like, how is that any different than prostitution or being like basically like a cam girl or cam guy?
Well, I'd say the relationship is very one-sided. in that regard. The person donating the money isn't necessarily getting the attention they feel that they are entitled
to.
I've seen some big streamers get large donations, and all they get is a, hey, man, how's it going?
But you see, what I'm saying is there are people that give those huge donations, and that's all they're asking for, because they think that they've made a connection. I'm worried about the psychological ramifications of the way that they're doing this tip things. I love Patreon. I love the idea of subscribing to something, of giving a tip if you really like somebody's work. It's almost like you're a busker. Like I said, you're like a street performer. I don't like the idea of taking somebody's money for a shout out.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I watch a few online personalities, and I tip occasionally because I genuinely enjoy their content, and I'm getting something back at it.
Because you're doing exactly what is intended, or what they on the surface are intending. I'm talking about the habitual people that they spend like $100 a week just like giving $2 or $3 at a time because they just want the attention or they want to feel like they're connecting.
I've seen some people who I would argue are troublesome. I'm not going to discuss them on the podcast.
No, of course.
But I've seen some people go where they're overly generous, and I'm thinking, wow, you have a lot of money to spend, or
you're scamming credit cards.
something seems a little off, but hey, you're making some people happy. You're making the streamer happy. Yeah. Party on. Whatever makes you sleep at night.
I guess you know what my thing is? It's just like gambling or drinking, moderation. Just
yeah, make sure
you're not spending money that you need for something else, because it seems like for somebody like a ninja or one of these people, I think it's a little absurd that to be giving them tips because they're already getting like hundreds of thousands of dollars in sponsorships.
Yeah, especially like a streamer like Ninja does not need your $5.
And actually, I don't know. I'm not anti-capitalism. I'm not. But to me, it seems not just greedy. It seems like you're preying upon people because you're making, like, sure, it's like, well, it's like $1,000 or $1,200 I'm making from the stream, which is, you know, cool. That on its own would be great money. But the reality is you're getting 50 or 100K for that stream on sponsored deals. You shouldn't even have tipping enabled. You don't need that. In fact, those people that are giving you the money could really use probably that money to hold on to. When you're corporately sponsored, you shouldn't be receiving tips anymore.
Yeah, there's something about that that kind of rubs me the wrong way, especially if you're making that ridiculous amount of money.
Or whatever tip, like I would do it. Let's say I was Ninja's popularity and I was getting like $1 million or $2 million a year. I would not only be donating money, I would say today's stream, any tips that come in are going to this local charity.
Or all tips go to ALS local animal shelter or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Or heck, even like you'd be like, okay, so today I'm playing this game and the local charity of this time is this. Or it's like I'm gonna take all the tip money and I'm gonna go to a local library or to a local, you know, school, and we're gonna donate to their media lab so the kids can get into media creation like me. I would be doing stuff like that.
That's a great idea.
But do you notice that you never hear any of these streamers doing that?
The only streamer I know who genuinely does a lot of stuff and gives out a lot of money because he can is a YouTuber called Mr. Beast. And I saw him do this last year live. A friend of mine was streaming. Her name is Fuya. And this guy just pops up in her chat. And over the course of a single day, donated $3,000 worth of subscriptions to her channel,
which is cool. It's basically donating to her. Saying, which is super cool. But I think I'm talking
larger about, streamers on a much larger scale, Lupo and Dr. Disrespect.
We're talking like this is like getting a couple grand a session is pennies to them.
Yeah.
So they either shouldn't be accepting it, they should be giving it out, because like the issue is the people a lot of times that get this, they're young people. They're people under 35.
Or even under 30. Like I said, they're your ninjas. They're your Tfues. Dr. Disrespects.
That some of them have been streaming now or doing this sort of competitive gaming since they were teenagers. Mm-hmm. And they didn't really have to learn the value of money. So and what it's like to not have it and what it's like to be responsible, because they've always had the steady stream of cash coming in now. for basically playing a game, you see people complaining like about how hard it is, or they want to get out of it because they're bored. It's, you don't get out of it. If you're really successful, it's your fucking job. And but they're not learning a work ethic, is the issue I see with a lot of them. And because they're so young making this kind of crazy money, they're not as socially or fiscally responsible as they probably should be. Like,
I've seen very few people who are in the positions that they hold that are responsible. I can think of one person who I know is really good with their money because their investments pay out well, because they're not stupid, because they had the education going into it.
Exactly. But I think it's not that they don't deserve the money. It's that they've not had the life experience to know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. So I say, prove me wrong if somebody has examples out there, but like, I don't think Ninja is doing with his money what he probably should be.
Yeah, I'd be very curious to see how his financials work out. But then again, hey, you make more money than God.
Well, so easy come, easy go. Like, these, you're probably going to find in the next 5 to 10 years, a lot of them that when they get out of it, they're going to be like Wesley Snipes. They're going to owe the government a shit ton of fucking tax money that they didn't know about, or be completely broke and not be able to spend it. And you're going to find that news stories start popping up. Streamer worth $5 million, streamer worth $20 million in prison because they tax evasion or you know, money for problems, or they went bankrupt. Now they're homeless. They had to move back with their parents after leaving their $5 million home. You're going to find this stuff because they weren't properly educated and trained.
Well, I know a lot of people are talking about the, like, esports bubble, and you can't talk about esports without talking about streaming. Yeah. The two are intrinsically linked, and the esports bubble is going to pop sooner or later because organizations are having to pay out these exorbitant salaries, and the people who are investing are hoping this money is going to come back to them.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is the streaming thing right now is, it was a little bit like that when YouTube started paying out, but this is the dot-com bubble all over again. For those of us that are old enough, which most of the streamers weren't around when the dot-com bubble exploded. So, like, they were like 5 years old, if that. So you remember Nortel in Canada and all these other companies that were talking, or even BlackBerry, but like, we're talking companies that were multi-billion dollar companies that overnight were gone. So it can happen.
Yep. You overextend your reach. You fly towards the sun on wings made of wax. Sooner or later, something's going to happen.
Exactly.
So moving on to our next story, Paramount Pictures has an astounding movie that was originally released for November of this year. However, director Jeff Fowler in Paramount Pictures has announced that Sonic the Hedgehog, beloved video game mascot, has had his movie delayed till February 14th, 2020. So
I don't call it Sonic. I call it, it looks like heroin addict Sonic.
Nightmare fuel Sonic, as the visual design team is taking quote unquote time to get the design just right and the character design to take fans' concerns, if you will, into consideration. Wow, who didn't see this coming? I can't wait until a new trailer drops with the newly redesigned Sonic, and people hate that too.
My roommates were saying, oh, it's probably going to be worse because they. To this day, if you notice when they talk about it in the tweets, they don't know what was wrong with the character.
Well, Sega has openly said, this is all Paramount, guys.
Oh, it's more than that. Sonic has its own, like, they have their own PR team. Like, Sega has PR for all the movies and everything else that they make and TV.
And brands.
Sonic has its own PR team. And if you look at things that have been tweeted out, they're going crazy trying to spin how to fix this because they had no input. This is a case of what happened with Mario in the 90s. Sega just licensed out their character without having any quality control. They openly just took the highest bidder and gave it. Whereas what Detective Pikachu was a close creation with Game Freak and Nintendo. So,
well, plus Nintendo had been burned when they made the original Mario Brothers in the 90s. They were very, very, very hesitant. You didn't see a lot of Nintendo properties outside. I mean, hell, the only Nintendo properties I can think in the 90s were the Captain N cartoon, Mega Man, and Donkey Kong Country.
Well, Mega Man was Capcom.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. So Donkey Kong Country, which the show itself was weird, but it looked good.
It was a Canada-French co-production, and they used, I believe, they based it on assets from the N64 game.
Yeah, so it looked okay, all things considered.
Yeah, and also, it wasn't Mainframe that made it, but they were like, Canada makes good animated TV shows, so they just, they had us make it.
So I suspect we'll see a trailer for this probably come September, or maybe Comic-Con. You'll see some very early work. They'll release another teaser trailer.
Am I the only one that's like really hoping that it's really bad? And we're talking.
You know, it pains me because I really want this movie to be successful, because I think Sonic is cool, but I think a Sonic animated movie would have made a lot more sense. Or do it like 3D, like make it like the Lego movie. Who would have thought Legos would have worked? I don't know. Sonic the Hedgehog, you've got a lot of goddamn work cut out for you. I don't see how it's going to... I mean, at least Jim Carrey as Robotnik looks fantastic.
Yeah, I think the damage might already be done. You only get one chance at a first impression. I am going to go see it. Not to shit all over it, but to laugh my ass off at how bad it is.
And it's going to be terrible.
There's nothing about this that could be good. Like, really. Jim Carrey is going to be terrible. It's going to be fun terrible, but it's going to be terrible.
Oh, yeah. So, moving on to more movie news, this is a story, Alex, you actually brought up. Apparently, I can't pronounce this guy. The guy who directed Thor Ragnarok, pronounce his name for me.
Taika Waititi.
His Akira film vision is apparently happening and will actually be here in 2 years.
And it's a heck of a lot better looking and sounding than the one that they had with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and...
Leonardo DiCaprio at one point?
No, it was Chris Evans, where they took... what's his name there? Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and they stretched his head to be bigger to match Canada's, and they also set it in New Manhattan instead of Tokyo, and it's like, oh good God, it's like it was made in the 80s as a crossover or something. But I know that at one point Ed Norton was trying to get this made. I think he's moved on to the Robotech movie instead, because he gave up on trying to make this. But people are complaining, like, Taika Waititi, he only makes comedies. It's like, just because the director's only made comedies doesn't mean they can only make comedies.
Yeah, I mean, the Russo brothers began on Arrested Development.
Yeah.
And look at what they've done.
Yeah, what it shows is he has a really good way of getting chemistry out of actors in his movies. So he also has done an interview where he talked about how much of a fan he was. The movie came out, was it 86 or 87, something like that? I think it was
88.
It was 88. I think he said 89 is when it came to New Zealand. That's when he got to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it's stuck with him since then as one of the best things he'd ever seen. So this is somebody who was a fanboy over 30 years ago.
And he wants to stick closer to the manga as opposed to the movie.
Yeah,
so.
He said it's not a remake of the anime. So the anime was a condensed version that only told one part of the story out of a gigantic, several volume series. So he might pick up from the beginning and make this into a series, like a series of movies, which is probably what the studio is hoping for.
Yeah, because they definitely want to get those like franchise bucks. And
yeah,
we're still waiting for a good adaptation of an anime in Hollywood. I have hopes for the Robotech movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, the closest... The Alita Battle Angel was really good.
Yes, and that comes out, I think, in July at some point, I think.
What, like on video?
Yeah, on home video, yeah.
Because it was fantastic. It was the closest we've gotten to a good one. You know, Ghost in the Shell was hot garbage. Pretty much
it looked pretty.
Yeah, but pretty much every other adaptation has been garbage. But it, like, I thought I was not going to like the animeified eyes on
Alita herself. Yeah.
But it worked in the world and it was well done. And I could see them doing another one. So
I hope so.
It was almost like a proof of concept. It's like, and also that was a film that had numerous
James
delays.
James Cameron had been attached to it for like a decade.
Yeah. But he's a fucking moron that takes forever to make anything. And so it was in danger of not coming out. So they went, Robert Rodriguez, every movie he makes is made earlier than expected and under budget. So they're like, let's give it to him. And he delivered probably something better than Cameron could have. Not necessarily visually, with if Cameron had had his extra $100 million or whatever he wanted to make it. But it ended up being a much more fun, true to the manga version. So I could totally see this working. And if Akira comes out, I almost think that it's because of Alita and Ready Player One that we've now got this renewed interest, because they've basically strip mined comic books. The only thing that hasn't been done yet are some of the like the third party smaller companies, like Sony's doing that deal with Valiant to get their entire universe.
Yeah.
So other than that, like, what's next? Well, they're going to start strip mining anime. Because if we get a Robotech movie, I will be very happy. Maybe we'll have a chance to get a real Gundam movie.
Yeah, Gundam or Ava, which is said to be unfilmable. I'd be very curious.
It could be done. How about a fucking Cowboy Bebop?
That's supposed to happen. I think there's a Cowboy Bebop Netflix series or something coming out.
Okay, how about Trigun?
You know, I'd be cool for that.
Berserk, make it hard R. Like, you can do these things now. It's proven because of Deadpool and some other films that you can make these, you know, previously thought of unfilmable versions of you know, props. Fuck, like Sailor Moon, man. Like, how about something like that?
I'd totally be down for that. Or it wouldn't surprise me if we see My Hero Academia adapted in the next 5 years.
That'll fucking happen. I love that. I'm watching Black Clover, the sort of, you know, sister show to that, which is fucking great. Maybe we'll get a good adaptation of Fist of the North Star.
Yeah, give it time, folks.
I guess technically we have. It's just Mad Max. So, like, as far as other big properties go, like, Gundam would be the big one, obviously.
Yeah.
But I mean, the sky's the limit now that we know that it can be done, and Gundam looked fantastic in Ready Player One. So, like, is there anything else that, you know, they can't do, or what's the direction you think they're going to go in? Obviously, comic book movies, they know the bubble's going to burst, and they're still going to keep going probably strong for the next 5 or 6 years. And I don't know how...
As long as Marvel makes successful comic book movies, the audience will always be there.
Yeah, I just don't know if we're going to have these every movie makes $1 billion like we've had the last year or so. Because we're getting to the point where I think we're at the zenith of that. They're going to have to go through a lull. They're going to have to go through a building period. And what better way than to tap into probably the biggest pool of resources that they haven't tapped into, which is, you know, anime and manga. Because you've already got the storyboards. It's the fucking art itself. So it's so much easier. That's why comic book movies have done so well, is they can just rip it right from the pages. That you can actually, a lot of times, use that as your storyboard basis.
Yeah. So we'll wait and see what happens. All right, guys, so that's what happened in the news this week. We're going to take a special look at my review from DK Publishing, the LEGO Star Wars Visual Dictionary New Edition. We'll be back, guys, right after this, only on ThisWeekInGeek.net. Today we are looking at the LEGO Star Wars Visual Dictionary New Edition, coming to us from DK Publishing. Well, this edition, as always, comes with an exclusive minifigure, though I'm not quite sure who it is looking at it, though. But that being said, this thing is an absolute enormous tome of Star Wars knowledge. Some stuff I didn't even realize that the LEGO stuff really kind of got into. I was looking through this. It has 5 chapters kind of going through the entire Star Wars saga from the fall of the Republic all the way to the rise of the New Order. And they even go through things like the different Jedi starfighters, who piloted them, the differences between them, how some have to use hyperspace rings, some of the new Jedi interceptors that you saw in Episode 3. But one thing that I was really impressed with is they detailed the clone trooper legions. So you see Commander Cody's Legion, you see the 501st, you also see the different ranks in between them, like some Stormtrooper minifigures may have dots on their chest, that denotes rank. Other ones might have shoulder pauldrons to determine what sect they're a part of, and that's more noticeable in the later stuff too. But it also fills out so many parts of the Star Wars lore I wasn't even familiar with. One of the things I saw in here was a TIE Defender, and that's something that, if I remember correctly, was in the Star Wars video game TIE Fighter that came out in like the mid-90s. There are some incredibly deep cuts in this book, and some I really, really didn't expect. So DK Publishing really went to bat here. If you want to get an expansive look at the LEGO side of the Star Wars universe, I gotta say, I am tremendously impressed with the amount of detail. If you look towards the back of the book, they talk a little bit about exclusives. I didn't realize they put out solid brass and solid gold versions of Boba Fett and C-3PO randomly inserted into collector's editions or collector's packs way back in the day. Wow, I can only imagine how much those are worth now on the secondary market. They also talk a little bit about the Comic-Con exclusives that you can get from various toy fairs and Comic-Cons, etc., which I think is tremendously neat. But it's the incredible amount of detail. They tell you what year the sets are from, how many pieces, if there's variants, stuff like that. That's incredibly cool. So I gotta say, the LEGO Star Wars Visual Dictionary New Edition is most definitely worth adding to your collection if you're a LEGO aficionado or if you want a deeper view into the Star Wars universe in brick and stud form.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
Welcome back to This Week in Geek. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd, joined with Alex, the producer. Let's get to the weird, wacky, the just plain fucked up what happened around the world this week. Alex, what if I told you could take over a major United States city and it would only cost you 13 bitcoins? What would you say?
It would depend on the major city, as well as if the city also happens to have some form of cave system that I could turn into a supervillain lair. There's a bunch of factors involved in here. Is it landlocked? Is it Detroit because it's not worth it? It's not worth 13 bitcoin. I'm pretty sure you could buy like all of Detroit for one Bitcoin.
So evidently the city of Baltimore, since the beginning of the month, has been held hostage by hackers who have done a ransomware attack that is preventing city employees from accessing email accounts and websites to essential services, including websites where they pay their water bills, property taxes, and parking tickets. And they're only asking 13 bitcoins, so approximately $114,000 in U.S. funds stand between you and the city of Baltimore and your parking tickets. And this is not the only time this has happened, if you can believe that.
I'm pretty sure the Baltimore City Council convened and realized that Baltimore isn't worth 13 bitcoin.
It's so ridiculous. I mean, I can't believe a major metropolitan city in the United States is being held hostage by literally script kiddies.
Baltimore the murder capital of the states, though?
It is, and it's also one of the most corrupt police forces, and it's not a very nice place to be.
So are you sure there. The police aren't holding it hostage?
Wouldn't that be a twist in this story? Now, this isn't the first time this has happened either. A little while ago, hackers took over the 911 system for about a day, and Baltimore came under scrutiny for how they handled that attack as well. It's a mess. It's a mess. And this is not the first time I've heard of hackers taking on something major in recent news. I remember earlier this summer we reported that Arizona Ice-T had their computers compromised by hackers in a ransomware attack. And I don't think they demanded anywhere near 13 bitcoins, but it was something ridiculous. And the fact that the hackers were only asking for 13. Now, the value of a bitcoin fluctuates daily. Some days it's worth a lot, some days not so much. Yeah. So the longer the city holds out, the more it's going to cost them.
But like 13 Bitcoin, like if this was New York or LA, first of all, they would find out where they are and murder them. But secondly, if this was like LA or New York, they would be asking for like 500 Bitcoin. You know what I mean? Like they would be asking for like $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they were smart in going after Baltimore, you know, a city rich enough to pay, but not rich enough that, you know, anybody cares. So like you figure that like the NSA would be on this right away, but like even them, they're probably like Baltimore sucks. So all I know about Baltimore is that it's the murder capital. And isn't that where The Wire takes place?
The Wire takes place there, and BronyCon used to take place in Baltimore. So
all the things that are evil in the world.
Yes, all stem from Baltimore. And I think Billy from Nerds of the Third Power, or Dr. Gonzo, is from there too. So.
Oh, good Lord. Does he still live there? Wait, is he holding them hostage?
Wouldn't that be a twist?
You have to ask him on next week's Nerd. Are you holding your city hostage? And he'd be like, shh, quiet, Nod.
You know,
I gotta get me some of that. I gotta get me some of that fucking Bitcoin money.
So this is a story that you sent me that I thought was actually kind of funny. Evidently, this popular potato chip brand you can find only in prison. So take it away.
I'm trying to remember the actual brand because I read the article, and the interesting thing about it is, it's one of those things where, you know, when you're in prison, not that you know, but in prison,
yeah.
You know, like prison or schools have like their own branding on certain products. They'll have like bulk food sent to them. Mm-hmm. Well, prisons are no different, and they'll have certain companies brand, you know, their potatoes or their orange juice. Like it wouldn't necessarily be like Sunny Delight, it'll have its own brand name or whatever, and it'll be like a vat of that sort of shit. Well, this company that supplies a lot of prisons with potato chips in the commissaries, it's not that the chips themselves, like the way they're fried or whatever, or is different. It's that, you know how up in Canada we have all dressed, and in the States they don't have all dressed really for the most part, where it's sort of it's in like an all spice, a mixture of barbecue, salt and vinegar. Everything but sour cream is sort of mixed together into one. It's basically that. It's all of the leftover seasonings from all the other chips thrown into one bag because it's cheap rather than throwing it out, right? Whatever gets filtered through. So it's so popular in prison that a lot of people, you know, once they've served their time, you know, become productive members of society again, they try to find ways to get inmates to give it to them or smuggle it out or buy it by the case because they're become so hooked on that flavor that they can only get in prison. And it makes you kind of wonder, do you think you would recommit a crime just so you could get chips?
I'm not that fucking fat.
No, but here's the thing. What if they're really fucking good, dude? Like,
I don't know. If I could go back in time and get me some of those Doritos Italiana, I might commit a crime because they tasted like fucking tacos.
Dude, the chips that that Food Basics had that was like their knockoff Doritos that were spicy knockoff Doritos.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's ever made a flavor like that. I can't remember exactly what they were called, but they are my holy grail, and I might cut a motherfucker if I found out that like local prison had them.
Now, supposedly you can buy them online via the whole shebang.com.
Yeah, basically you'd have to buy like wholesale crates of them sort of thing.
Yeah, you can buy a deluxe variety pack, which doesn't include very many bags, for $35. Because if you want to buy just one of the bags,
yeah,
or one of the, a six pack is $20. A 12-pack will run you just $35.
Yeah,
so like, it's not worth going to prison.
No, like Amazon sells them in packs of one for $6 a piece. Now that's American. So
I think we should contact these people.
Yeah, they may not ship to Canada though because foods.
That's true.
But there's two different flavors though. There's original. I mean, it's basically, it's all dressed, but like seasoned like crazy, like a lot more. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those, I'm pretty sure it would be like, what if all, you know how they have, was it Sobeys has their own Ruffles that have like double the flavor sort of thing? Mm-hmm. It's probably like double the all dressed, but they also have an extreme shebang, which is their version of Ruffles, and it looks like it's they added hot sauce to it, or like a chili pepper flavor. So, and if you buy it, you get a snack chip clip, like, you know, like your grandma would have to close the bag, because, you know, grandparents apparently can actually eat a bag of chips over the course of 3 or 4 days, whereas every civilized human eats it all at once, right? but yeah, I just thought it was kind of interesting that you would think that prison food would be garbage, just like airline food, but apparently there's a few things worth re-entering prison for.
There you go. Who would have figured a bag of chips would have been one of them? So moving on to our last story here on the weird news this week. So evidently Pornhub searches are surging because someone uploaded a video of them fucking in a Tesla X on autopilot. And then Elon Musk started tweeting about it. The clip first appeared online in late April, I think. And since then, searches spiked on May 9th and May 10th when Elon Musk started tweeting about it. So Elon Musk said, there are more ways to use autopilot than we imagined. Elon Musk then replied, should have seen it coming.
Oh boy.
Which I went back and watched the aforementioned sex video, which just took me a surprising amount of time to find. I figure if I just would have typed in Tesla sex, it would have popped up right away. No, I had to type in almost the exact video title for this. And I was chatting with my friend Stephanie about this.
It might
not
have been tagged very well.
Yeah, it was not tagged well. It's like random girl comes in me Tinder date or something. It's some ridiculous title like that. And I was talking with my friend Stephanie, and you see the guy using the autopilot, and he's having relations with this girl. He's having sex with her. And I started talking to my wife, Blair, and I'm like, okay, these people must be extremely small. Like physically built tiny, because even if you lay the seat all the way back in the Tesla,
yeah,
she's performing oral sex on him at one point. Okay, that's acceptable. We've all heard of Roadhead, party on, whatever. Moving on.
Found the video.
She then gets on top of him. She must have her neck at an unbelievably cramped angle. And it just it blows the mind to figure the physics of this. This cannot be a very comfortable sexy time session.
Okay, she's
to say
also
the very
like
fucking
5 feet
least
tall.
Okay, yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. She's fucking tiny.
She gets in the car, and like when she's standing outside of the car, her head is barely above the roof of the car.
So she's okay, like, that part I didn't notice.
So she's like 5'1", if that. When she's sitting in the car seat before anything happens here, her feet don't go all the way to the front of the seating area, and her head is almost a full head lower than the headrest.
Oh, okay.
She is tiny, and I'll bet you that the man driving is probably tiny as well.
Yeah, I just thought that was kind of
analyzing
funny.
This for science, apparently.
although it kind of weirds me out to think that the autopilot is that good. That you can, like, although you do see the guy touching the wheel occasionally, but not with any sort of intent to keep the car straight or do anything else. It's just he's touching the wheel, I guess, to keep the autopilot engaged or something.
Oh, yeah, and it's definitely not very comfortable. He also has his seat all the way back, and I believe he has
his visor down or whatever.
He has a seat moved all the way back, and he has it tilted all the way back, too. And comfortable.
No, like,
yes,
I'm sure
million views.
That's ridiculous. Too bad you couldn't monetize that shit.
You can. It is monetized.
Oh, well, in that case, that person's getting paid.
It has the woman in the video is on her account. It's premium user, verified member, meaning shares ad revenue. So it's just like YouTube. So she's getting some money from this, which is pretty good.
That's a significant payday.
48,000 upvotes, 16,000 downvotes. number one comment.
This will be good.
It's from a fake John F. Kennedy account.
Yeah.
And it says John F. Kennedy, and then it has a picture of JFK. And it says, "So this is what I died for. Awesome." Oh, and then somebody else says it should be a Tesla commercial. Let me see here.
So this is what I died for.
And then somebody says, stop jerking off and got in my feels when Lucid Dreams came on at 7:55, the song playing on the radio.
Oh, wait, God.
Oh, God. You're so wet. I take this as meaning you ruining my fucking seat in my expensive Tesla.
I actually made a joke about that. Like, the amount of car detailing this is going to take at some point.
Oh, God, it's too good. The comments are just insane.
You know, one of my favorite functions of Pornhub.
Yeah.
Is sometimes some of the comments there. Sometimes people will post legitimate homework questions or gameplay questions. I've had people like, how do you beat this quest in Fallout 4? And someone give them a walkthrough how to beat it.
One person who was saying the refresh rate of your camera is killing me. And then below that, they said, tip for the uploader. If you change your focal point, it's like a whole list right here about how they could have filmed it a little better using a wider angle lens. And then
porn critique.
And then it just one of the other comments was Tesla should make a fuck wagon. So basically they, you know, like an old
shaggin' wagon,
like Volkswagen Bug.
Mm-hmm.
Or Volkswagen, oh, sorry, a Volkswagen
the bus.
Bus, yeah. I think they should make a Tesla one of those. But I do like that the number one comment is, so this is what I died for. Awesome. From JFK. And then
and that's,
the comment is capitalism and democracy at work.
You asked for it, folks. We delivered.
And that's funny. And that's like, other porn sites, that they're flooded with comments that are either bots or people from around the world where maybe English isn't the first language. So they're usually like very related
ridiculous.
To the video. Pornhub, like you said about the comments, a lot of times it's very funny, articulate people that are commenting, and the comments are sometimes better than like what you find on like a YouTube video.
Like, hell, some of the memes I've seen have come out of Pornhub comments. So there's some brilliant comedy writers out there who just happen to want a little bit of happy time all of themselves. So that's the way it's been on This Week in Geeks. Weird news this week. We don't have a Satan's Pantry this week as we're currently getting ready to cook up some stuff from the Ninja Turtles cookbook and the Walking Dead cookbook. So we should have that returning in the next week or two. So stay tuned for that from me and Alex. Also, I guess since I'm here, I'll talk about it in the extra. But here is Alex's review of I'm Not Quite Sure What, because he hasn't told me yet.
It's The Poison Rose, the new VVS Blu-ray starring John Travolta, Morgan Freeman, Brendan Fraser, Femke Janssen, a few other people.
All right, so we'll be back, guys, right after this, only on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Last week, VVS Films sent over a pre-release copy of The Poison Rose, which is a brand new movie starring John Travolta, Morgan Freeman, Femke Janssen, Brendan Fraser, and a slew of other good character actors. Now, what is The Poison Rose? It is a sort of detective movie mixed with a noir hybrid based in the 70s about a detective played by, a private investigator played by John Travolta, who travels from Los Angeles back to his hometown in Galveston, Texas to investigate a missing woman, which then turns into a murder mystery and corruption abounds and all the basic hijinks and shenanigans that you get from a film noir. Now, is this a good film? Yeah, I would say if I was giving it a rating, I would go, it's about a 6 or 7 out of 10, especially for a direct-to-video movie. It's a cut above a lot of the TV mysteries that you see. It's quite entertaining. I wasn't able to predict everything that was going to happen in it, which is usually my fear when I go into watching these, because I've seen so many mystery shows that I can usually see it telegraphed a mile away. This was actually pretty good in that it kept things pretty secretive throughout, but it wasn't like a boneheaded move or anything that that comes out of nowhere. It's pretty good as far as like giving you just enough hints to see where things are going. Its runtime is about an hour and 40 minutes or so, and that seems about right. It doesn't overstay its welcome. I can actually see this turning perhaps into a series of movies. It's the kind of thing where this character could be used multiple times. It was pretty good. Visually, it was really good. The only thing I didn't care for is the title credit sequence looked a little hokey. It was sort of flying in, a little TV-ish, not so serious that it should have been. As far as the cinematography goes, it's good. The acting is pretty good across the board. John Travolta's one of his better performances recently. A little less crazy, a little more grounded. Morgan Freeman is fantastic as always. Even Brendan Fraser is really interesting as a psychiatric hospital doctor. Then, as far as anything else goes, you got surround sound audio, lossless, a couple trailers here and there. Nothing fancy as far as the special features. It's pretty bare bones and straightforward. That being said, it'll run you about $20-ish, depending on if it's on sale or not. It comes out, I believe, either today or tomorrow, based on when this review comes out. So it's one that I would say is worth watching if you're a fan of any of the actors involved. If you are a fan of mystery movies, it's one to pick up. It's the kind of thing where I watched it when we had a crazy thunderstorm. So it's the kind of movie that plays well to sitting inside on like a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday afternoon and watching, you know, a movie marathon of mystery films while you're waiting for the weather to clear up. So I would give it a recommendation. It's not Chinatown by any means, but it's not, you know, a Lifetime TV movie. This is actually a fairly good direct-to-video release.
And that's the kind of show it has been here on This Week in Geek. Hopefully you've had a chance enjoying us here on the show as we've talked about Tesla fucking, hackers, Sonic the Hedgehog's weird design, Call of Duty, and so much more over the course of the last hour. Big thanks to DK Publishing for providing the Lego Star Wars book to us. We definitely appreciate it. And also Warner Brothers Home Entertainment for Lego Movie 2, the second part. Hopefully you will check those both out when you get a chance. And also The Poison Road from who again?
Poison Rose from VVS Films.
Poison Rose. Sorry, I got that wrong. But anyway, guys, housekeeping announcements. Mr. Tristery will be taking a little bit of a leave of absence from the show as he does some personal development for over the next little bit. So you'll probably see him on and off over the next couple weeks. Hopefully we'll get him back in here for E3. That is my hope and my goal for this. Other than that, I'm still doing Nerd to the Third Power. I'm on there almost weekly. We just did a big Dungeons and Dragons episode, which was a lot of fun between me, Kat, Dr. Gonzo, and Skyblaze. Not quite sure what we're going to be talking about over the next little bit. We got a rotation coming up on that show, so that's a little bit of behind-the-scenes info where we plan out what we're going to talk about for the next month or so. So, yeah, we got a big special coming up in the middle of this week where me and Alex talk about TV shows, a little bit about Detective Pikachu, but mostly Big Bang Theory and Game of Thrones series finales. Did they stick the landing and or not? We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the week. What's coming up from you? My wife just farted. That was disgusting.
Is it really stinky?
Yes, it is.
Oh, good God. Okay.
That's marriage, folks.
So for anybody that might be following some of the stuff I've been talking about, I have had, so far, the summer of free movies, right? With either a theater breaking down, another theater breaking down, or magical gift cards that I thought were dead having magically worked. I've now somehow come into getting 7 free movies over the summer. So
oh, wow.
I have an opening night IMAX pass this coming Thursday. I think it's at 4 or 6 p.m. to go see Godzilla. So I'll be seeing Godzilla, and I will probably give a spoiler-free reaction thought on our next show. Just, you know, basically, does it live up to the hype? How does it feel? That sort of shit. And then the following Thursday, I have an IMAX opening night special presentation pass for Dark Phoenix. And apparently, ooh, for that special fan presentation, I get a keychain or something.
Ooh, that's cool.
And then I also have for July, I have a free movie I am seeing.
Spider-Man?
Spider-Man, opening day at noon because it opens on a Tuesday. And then I still have actually like 2 more passes, I think. I can see 2 or 3 more movies. So we'll see what's coming up. I might see Stuber, or I might see, probably going to go see the Toy Story 4. I still have to watch 3. And I
can't It'll break your heart. It's so good.
Probably. And I and Hobbs and Shaw, the spinoff of Fast and Furious, comes out at the end of the summer. So
where they fight Superman.
Yeah. So basically, I've found a way to get all my summer movies completely covered.
Good job. I'm hoping to see John Wick 3 at some point, maybe this week. I don't know. I'll have to wait and see. I want to see Rocket Man, Godzilla, Chucky, Spider-Man. A lot of good stuff coming out of the year. So we'll probably have a lot of movie specials coming out this season.
Yeah.
So look forward to that. We're also going to try and get a few more commentaries in before the heat hits, as during the summer we may go to a summer schedule where we have a new talk show every other week and we'll have a commentary during the off weeks. So we haven't quite discussed that just yet, because when it's a million degrees in this apartment, it's hard to record.
It may be something. We usually try to do stuff together, but it may be something if it's like, you know how we had the last few commentaries that were done through the streaming networks, the free ones like Tubi. It's something that we could probably still record, remotely, if we don't want to be together in the crazy heat, and we just watch it together, just like the fans will with us. So we could record via Discord or something.
We will figure that out.
Either way, that's a little behind the scenes, but at the same time, there are methods, there are ways for us to do this.
Exactly. Don't you worry, folks. We'll figure it out.
In the scorching Ontario summer.
Oh, hot, humid. Fuck, I hate humidity. Anyway, guys, so for this week in Geek, we have been
Alex.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd, saying be cool, be kind, be careful, and as always, live for your diehard.
Well, that's our show. All right, here's the deal. Every time you watch my show, I will send you $40.
Checks will not be honored.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek, your source for guaranteed nonsense or your money back. Tune in next week for more info on the most important things you didn't need to know. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head over to this episode's post at thisweekingeek.net and leave a comment through Facebook Connect. Follow us on Twitter at thisweekingeek.net and follow our Instagram at @twig_official_podcast. Social media not your thing? Send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Just when you think this show is terrible, something wonderful happens.
What?
It ends.
I have to go. Somewhere there is a crime happening.
I can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets?
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody.
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it, Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
The internet can be your window to the world, or an open door that lets cyber criminals in. Online theft, webcam spying, and identity fraud are all on the rise. But you can stay safe with Kaspersky Lab, the world's most awarded internet security. Kaspersky protects your money, privacy, identity, and data with technology perfected over 20 years. So keep exploring. Kaspersky Lab will keep you safe online. Learn more at Kaspersky.com.